This is Ray Hadley in the morning, right across Australia.
And good morning and welcome. Thursday, the 5th of November. I'm Ray Hadley. Great to have you company on 2GB, 2CC, 4BC and stations on the Macquarie Regional, Southern Cross and Capital Radio Networks. Top of 23 in the city of Sydney, same out west, 30 in Brisbane. And we'll check the weather across the rest of the listening area shortly. No matter where you are, the number's the same, 131873. Email me at rayhadley.com, 2gb.com, 4bc.com.au. Access information from the program by going to facebook.com/the Ray Hadley Morning Show. Now, the program director of our radio station in Toowoomba, they're not quite with us yet, but they tell me that there's breaking news out of Toowoomba. A bomb threat has been received at Toowoomba Base Hospital in the last 25 minutes. Arriving staff are not being admitted to the building. That threat has been made against the hospital, and as a result, police are in the area. As soon as things happen in relation to that, we'll tell you more about it here. That's in Toowoomba. Now, it's a very busy news day, but really, I have to start the program with Bill Shorten and dancing in Kiribati. Every time our politicians go to a Pacific nation, they feel the need to dress like the locals, and in this particular case, dance nothing like the locals. Now, the locals came out and entertained the dignitaries with their magnificent dancing, the people from Kiribati. And then the opposition leader and the deputy opposition leader were invited to participate. Now, Tanya Plibersek is a fair dancer. She got up there and did the sort of dance a woman of her vintage would be expected to do. You know, a few moves from the 1980s, 1990s. But poor old Bill. There's that famous episode of Seinfeld where Elaine shows she simply can't dance. Well, Bill had his Elaine moment. It's everywhere on YouTube. He's like that embarrassing uncle at a wedding who thinks he can dance but simply can't. Now, I was MC at a wedding recently. I won't name the person involved, but there was a bloke at that wedding. And in fact, there was a lady as well who thought she could dance, but she was even kicking the leg like Elaine and the arm was almost hitting people in the face. But there were two examples of what I'm talking about, and I'm afraid that if Bill was at a wedding, he'd be the embarrassing uncle. He's the one that thinks he can dance but simply can't. And usually at those weddings, after that uncle has a few drinks, up he gets and away he goes. And everyone's sitting there saying, oh, God, here he goes again. Why is he dancing? Why doesn't he just sit down? As far as I know, Bill wasn't affected by alcohol, so he can't blame that. I think the conclusion we draw, and it's on the website, if it's not, we'll put it there almost immediately, the dancing of Bill in Kiribati, if in fact he can blame anything, I think he's just got out with this one. I'm uncoordinated. I simply can't dance. And that would be the end of it, would it not? We've got a super spy agency being named. We've got the Prime Minister and the Treasurer talking this morning as well, by the way, about a whole range of issues in relation to the way life will be for Australians when they try to rejig things in relation to tax and GST and all the rest of it. And we'll find out more about that through the course of the morning. A national intelligence super agency will be created using big data to better track potential terrorists, serious crime and deal with real-time threats such as recent Parramatta terrorist attack. Federal and state justice ministers and attorneys general expected to agree to the National Security Super Agency at a meeting today. And the federal minister, Michael Keenan, has already said that's exactly what they are hoping to do. Now, there are royal commissions running in parallel at the moment in relation to child sexual abuse and corrupt unions. It's hard to know where to start. But the one out of Queensland says two former senior staff at the Brisbane Grammar School said it was not their responsibility to monitor what a school council later revealed to be a serial pedophile was doing with students alone in a locked room with an odd red light system to bar entry. The former deputy principal, David Coote, was a friend of the school councillor, Kevin Lynch, and gave a eulogy at his funeral in 1997. The inquiry has heard there had been dozens of complaints of repeated sexual abuse against Lynch during his time at the school in the 70s and 80s, which have come forward since his death. Mr. Coote said if a boy had come to him with a complaint, he would have decided if there was substance to the allegation before I decided whether to pursue it. But there are other examples of Mr. Coote and others ignoring the complaints, and for that they stand condemned before the Royal Commission. Now, while that continues, and it's not just schools, it's various religious orders that stand condemned over this type of behaviour, the unions. Now, when I first started in talkback radio back in the 90s, there was a very powerful union bloke by the name of Frank Beelan. And Frank was of the right wing of the union movement, and he ruled with an iron fist. Frank, unfortunately, passed away probably 11 or 12 years ago now, and I had no idea, but I read today that a bit like some sort of feudal lord system, he anointed his son, Derek, to take over upon his demise. And Derek, well named, the National Union of Workers' boss, failed to appear before the Royal Commission yesterday because he's under psychiatric care. Well, the commissioner said, get yourself out of bed and get here by tomorrow, which apparently he's doing. He resigned his post as National Secretary of the National Union of Workers after he was summoned to appear before the commission last month. He's facing a raft of allegations about the misuse of missing union cash. Counsel assisting the commission told the inquiry nearly $600,000 had been spent on Mr. Beelan's union American Express card, including almost $40,000 on Tiffany Cad jewellery, perfume and Easter eggs. $39,000. Manchester bed linen, Lego toys, clothing, electrical blankets, cameras, rugs, skateboards, kitchen appliances, children's toys, iPads, Easter eggs, makeup, beauty care products and perfume. iTunes, $12,000. On dating websites, $2,271.70. And he even paid for a tattoo. A tattoo via union credit cards. Shortly after all of that was revealed, his niece, another who somehow has been anointed to be part of the union, her name is Danielle O'Brien. She's described as the former bookkeeper. She told the commission he also used his credit card to transfer cash into her PayPal account. She confirmed she received cash payments of $2,000 to $4,000 a month as recently as 2 months ago from his Amex card, which she used to pay the bills, but said she did not check if the spending was appropriate. I don't make decisions to just pay bills. She said she used the union credit cards to buy show tickets, holidays and luxury goods for herself and her family members, but she couldn't recall all of them. Everybody said something because I have a problem. I just buy things. I can't help myself. That's why I can't tell you what I have and what I don't have. I don't know. She started shaking and sobbing. She was shocked to be presented with evidence she'd falsified wage payments to officials and instead moved union cash into the tune of $69,000 into her own bank account. Oh my God, this looks bad. It looks bad, all right. And she should be prosecuted, and when her uncle appears, he should be prosecuted as well. These are low-paid workers paying for the largesse of crooks. It's called stealing money. John Singleton's horse, Dawny Perfect, has suffered an injury overnight and has been scratched from today's Crown Oaks. Jimmy Cassidy, who retires from race riding today, has three other rides but won't be riding in the Oaks because Dawny Perfect, unfortunately, has suffered an injury and won't be taking part. Now, we've got a whole range of things happening today in relation to the New South Wales government, and I've fought against this move by the Attorney General, Gabrielle Upton, to give more power to the Independent Commission Against Corruption. I've spoken to the Shooters and Fishers Party on air about all of this. Mr. Borsak spoke to me. I've spoken to the leader of the opposition in the upper house, and it appears we've had some luck. Because Adam Searle, representing the Labor Party, despite the fact that they voted for it in the lower house, or didn't oppose it, so to speak, has now joined the Shooters and Fishers Party and Fred Nile and will vote against the bill. And in fact, Fred's told the Attorney General she should withdraw it and withdraw it immediately. And this is an opportunity for a bit of decency to be revealed. Because what she was trying to do here, either inadvertently or directly, was give more power to the ICAC. And if you read the report by Inspector David Levine into the ICAC for the last year, you'll see that he doesn't think they're operating as well as they should be. In fact, he's been damning in his criticism of the ICAC. So it's really good that they're not going to have the power to be judge, jury and executioner, because that would be a bit like shock horror pulling the wings off butterflies, wouldn't it, Miss Latham? So that's not going to get through, which is fantastic news, because we've lobbied against that. And there's some other great news as well. In New South Wales, we've got the Police Integrity Commission, we've got the Ombudsman, we've got ICAC, and we've got Professional Standards. Any one of those organisations can investigate the New South Wales Police Force, members of the police force. Now, oh, by the way, John's just phoned. Long queues on the M4 westbound at Mulgoa Road turnoff. Long queues on the M4 westbound at Mulgoa Road turnoff. John will find out a bit more about that in a moment or two. Bear with me. Anyway, so what can happen? The Police Integrity Union can be running an inquiry. ICAC can run a parallel inquiry. The Ombudsman can oversee all of it. So you could possibly have three of the four running inquiries into the same matter. But the Deputy Premier and Police Minister Troy Grant, a former police officer, will implement findings from the former Shadow Attorney General Andrew Tink and go to Cabinet within a fortnight before Parliament rises. He won't comment at the moment. But it would mean the Ombudsman would be left with oversight over all areas of government except police, because what they're going to do is follow the lead of London and they'll have a single complaints authority. A single complaints authority. So, and it will be independent, it'll be removed from police, and the complaints authority will be funded, and all of a sudden the money that would go to the PIC, to the Ombudsman, to Professional Standards and ICAC to investigate police will go to one organisation, independent organisation, who can look at complaints against police. So we're not having three or four parallel investigations. And well done to Troy Grant. Common sense prevails. Now, David Lionhelm. Dear, oh dear, oh dear. Now, I mentioned yesterday that I was being criticised by his staffer, Helen Dale, and I had no idea who Helen Dale was. Absolutely no idea. Well, thanks to a number of people, I now know Helen Dale, in another life, was Helen Demidenko, who won the Miles Franklin Award in 1995 for the novel Hand That Signed the Paper, which told the story of a Ukrainian family who sided with the Nazis during World War II. At the time, the judging panel said Helen Demidenko's first novel displays a powerful literary imagination coupled to a strong sense of history and brings to light hitherto unspeakable aspects of the Australian migrant experience. Only problem was, she was not the daughter of Ukrainian people. And not the daughter of Ukrainian migrants. And she wasn't drawing on her family's history. She'd made it all up. She was, in fact, Helen Darville, the daughter of middle-class British migrants. So that's who we're talking about. She's done other things since. She was a reporter for the Courier-Mail, and I checked that, and she missed the boat there and was, in the end, I don't know if she dismissed or quit, but plagiarism raised its ugly head in relation to her. I wonder if she's ever had an original thought. Anyway, so I don't mind being criticised by someone who has a record like her, nor do I mind being criticised by a jerk like David Lionhelm. Because David Lionhelm basically flummed his way into politics. First of all, he was a member of the Liberty and Democracy Party. And he's had no luck. But he had a bit of luck when he convinced the Australian Electoral Commission that he should be able to call himself the Liberal Democratic Party. Now, the Liberal Party put on a blue about that, but the Electoral Commission allowed the change. In 2013, the Liberal Democrats in New South Wales had another bit of luck. They flummed first place in the 45 columns on the New South Wales ballot paper. And as a result, the first thing people saw in voting was Liberal in the first box and put a one against it. The LDP got 434,000 votes, or 9.5%, 50 times the vote it got in 2007 when it was the Liberty and Democracy Party. He's an articulate 62-year-old who was previously a member of the Labor Party. Well, you know, strange things happen in the Senate. We've seen the Senate turn up some buff heads, but this bloke is captain, coach and sole selector when it comes to buff heads. First of all, he wants to deny that the Indigenous Australians were the first people here. He doesn't want you to wear a helmet when you ride a push bike because it infringes your civil liberties. He made the remarkable statement that the people who were held captive by that madman in the Lint Cafe, if they'd had guns, they could have shot their way out. And, of course, he wants everyone to have a gun. I don't know whether you've read the paper lately or checked with the news services, but the indiscriminate madness that happens regularly, far too regularly, in educational institutions in the United States of America, where lunatics are given high-powered guns by the government because you've got the right to carry arms there, he wants that to happen here, does he? Oh, dear. Please, 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 Prime Minister, call a double dissolution. Call a double dissolution so we can farewell this jerk. Don't, I mean, by the time he stays here for one more year, after the full term, we'd have him for 7 years. Please don't. Call a double dissolution for no other reason than to get rid of him and dopes like him. Now, the problem out there on Mulgoa Road, there are two trucks, not one, but two trucks in the breakdown lane on Mulgoa Road that turn off from the M4 westbound. So that's the problem. Two trucks. And Jim's phoned me to say there's a bus in the left-hand lane, Parramatta Road, citybound, near McDonald's as well. We've had a fire in Queensland in the Lockyer Valley at Gatton. The Imperial Hotel and surrounding building have been destroyed. Not the other buildings, but the Imperial Hotel is gone. There's 7,000 people in Gatton, and crews came from Toowoomba and Ipswich, but the hotel could not be saved. The blaze was so intense, a number of firefighters had to be treated for heat exhaustion. It's understood the IGA supermarket and Supercheap Auto have been damaged on either side of the Imperial. Thankfully, no one was in the hotel at the time and no one was injured. The pub was built in the 1800s, and in 2013, the Imperial closed its doors to undergo an almost $2 billion renovation. That won't be happening now. The hotel was reportedly being used illegally as a hostel, and in July this year, the Queensland Fire and Emergency Services took out a court order against the owners to close the building because of a serious risk. Well, just as well they did, didn't they? Given, I mean, we could have had a tragedy there. Well done. Well done to Queensland Fire and Emergency Services for taking that action. Otherwise, the place could have been jam-packed full of people. Anyway, that's what's happened there. In sport, in relation to racing, an ex-Australian turf club executive has been banned from racing for 2 years for his involvement in the cobalt scandal. Matt Rudolph, the club's former executive general manager of racing, was found guilty by a subcommittee of trying to persuade trainer Sam Kavanagh to alter his evidence to stewards during a meeting in a Sydney hotel back in March. He lost his job and now won't be allowed to work in the industry for 2 years. The disqualification was backdated and will end in October of 2017, and that's good governance by the Australian Turf Club. Well done to them. Now, for listeners on 4BC, some news for you. You're going to the cricket this morning. You'll be going at around 9.25 your time, 10.25 daylight saving time. And please, if you've got any complaints about that, direct them to 4BC. I played no role in this, and I don't mind taking the blame when I am at fault, but it's not my fault you're leaving my program and going to the cricket. That's a decision made by the network, not made by me. Australia v New Zealand at the Gabba, and that's at 10 o'clock Queensland time, 11 o'clock in other states and territories. And, of course, it's live on Channel 9 and will be live on 4BC as well if you wish to listen to it in Brisbane. But you'll be leaving my program in about 1 hour from now. Now, we've got the Oaks. I've told you what's happened there as well. Dawny Perfect has been scratched. This weekend, the A-League tonight, Adelaide United take on Melbourne City. Tomorrow, Sydney FC at home to Brisbane Roar. Newcastle Jets at home to the Western Sydney Wanderers, Hunter Stadium. Sunday, Central Coast at home to Wellington Phoenix. That's what's happening there. The NBL, Sydney Kings take on Melbourne United at the Sydney Entertainment Centre. That's tonight. And Sydney, the bottom of the table. Melbourne, top of the table. Plenty for us to talk about. And Peter Dutton will come up, and we get him online from Dubai very, very shortly. You can call me, 131-873. I'm just getting news on this Toowoomba bomb threat. Wind News in Toowoomba is reporting to me staff are being allowed back into the Toowoomba base hospital following that bomb threat. So it apparently has been updated. It's not a serious threat. 4BC now reporting Queensland Fire and Emergency Services haven't been called to the hospital. Queensland police were there, but they don't think the threat is a serious one, and staff are allowed back into the hospital, which is good news. 131873 is the number. Email me, 2gb.com, rayhadley.com, 4bc.com.au. Get podcast, videos and program content. We're going to facebook.com/The Ray Hadley Morning Show. I'm Ray Hadley on 2GB, 2CC, 4BC, and stations on the Macquarie Regional, Southern Cross and Capital Radio Networks. 25 past the hour.
On the Ray Hadley Morning Show, traffic for AustralianFleetSales.com.au.
And from the Gladesville Bridge, delays Victoria Road all the way into the city. Also, Camaray on the freeway near Miller Street down the Sydney Harbour Bridge and Tunnel. Out of Brighton, the Sands, a lot of traffic on General Holmes Drive, Southern Cross Drive, still trying to make its way up towards the Moore Park area. M4 rather busy around the Cumberland Highway down to James Roos Drive. The Ryde Bridge slow in both directions. And Fairford Road, very heavy traffic northbound before Canberra Road, making its way onto Stacey Street up towards the Bankstown Shops. This is Ian Wallace for the Ray Hadley Morning Show.
Langcove Market Square has fresh food and dining covered. There's Woolworths, Lodge Restaurant, Ground Cafe, Big Barra Seafood, Hudson Meats, and now Oliver Brown Cafe on Burns Bay Road.
It's good to have your company. 131873 is that open line number. Now for Sydney today, more rain. We've had rain for most of this week, and looking out the back window, down she tumbles again. Showers in 23, Penrith 23, Liverpool 23, Richmond, Parramatta, Campbelltown all the same. Possible showers tomorrow. And again on Saturday, and again on Sunday, and again on Monday in Sydney. Possible showers as well for Brisbane today, but with a top of 30, a bit warmer. The airport 28, Ipswich 32, Logan 30, Winner-Manly 27, Redcliffe 28, Gold Coast 28, bit warmer Sunshine Coast 30. Tomorrow, showers and storms, they say. Same for Saturday, shower or two Sunday, and a shower or two Monday. So pretty much the same, although a bit warmer in Brisbane than in Sydney. For Canberra, showers possible, 8 storm 21. Port Macquarie rain and 23, Kempsey rain 23, Coffs Harbour rain 21, Wagga Wagga shower storm likely 24, Griffith shower storm 26, Goulburn shower storm 20, Cooma shower storm 19, Jindabyne shower storm 19, Orange storm 20, showers and storm Bathurst 21, same for Lithgow 18, and showers and storms for Barrel, Southern Highlands 17 degrees, Mildura a few showers and 25 degrees. 131873, Jim repeating, bus in the left-hand lane, Parramatta Road citybound near Macca's at 5 Dock has broken down. Well, Immigration Minister Peter Dutton joins me every Thursday. He's on his way back from Jordan, where he went to a refugee camp and presented the first Syrian refugees with their visas to come to Australia. He's currently between flights. I think he's in Dubai. Let me check. Minister, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Ray. How are you?
Yeah, well, are you in Dubai?
Mate, we've just landed in Dubai, so it's about 1:15 in the morning here, so we're on our way back home.
You've described your visit to the Syrian camp in Jordan as confronting. Tell me why it's so confronting.
Well, it's confronting when you see 40,000 children running around in a camp which doesn't have proper sewage, doesn't have electricity, and the wind is about to onset. So, look, it's a desperate situation for those people. And ultimately, as Australians, we can be proud of the support that we provide through the refugee and humanitarian programs. We can't save everybody, and we all know that. But the fact that we're providing support to 12,000 Syrians who have been displaced by this war is something that we're proud of. And this week, we issued the first travel documents to the first four families who will be in Australia by Christmas. And I think that's a great thing, and we just need to make sure that we get the security checks right, we get the health checks right, and ultimately we get the right people in, because I think they can add to our society. And as I say, we're generous people and we can provide support to them.
You think about all those people, you're talking about 40,000 children. They say that this camp's accepted more than 600,000 people fleeing the conflict, and yet we start the process with just four families. The reaction from those four families, grateful, desperate, what were they like?
But they were very grateful. So the one family I spoke to, in particular, two young boys from a Christian background, had obviously a terrible story to tell coming out of the region. And you can see the excitement, the trepidation on the faces of the young kids, and they're excited about coming to Australia to see kangaroos, to enroll in school, and they've got terrible backgrounds. I mean, people have been slaughtered in this part of region. The Assad regime has gassed its own people. There are literally millions of people who have been displaced, and they, I think, are looking for a new home, and I think they will be willing to work hard and take the chance that's been afforded them. But it is a slow process, because I've made it very clear to the staff on the ground, which was part of the reason for the visit, that we're not going to compromise on the security checks. There are a lot of people running around with fraudulent passports and IDs, and we're going to do the checks properly and thoroughly so that we don't have any security threats and we don't have any problems arising out of the process. So we want to get people here quickly, as the government's committed to, but ultimately we're not going to compromise when it comes to those security checks.
Now, I know it's a bit difficult given you're on the other side of the globe, but we had a bit of a battle yesterday in relation to Liberal Democrat Senator David Lionhelm. He's had a meeting with police in Parramatta and Western Sydney, and also with Sam Dastyari from the Labor Party, this self-appointed committee to look at the nanny state. He used words that were used by soccer supporters describing all police as bastards. He confirmed that he agreed with that and said that they had to unearn that slur, that all cops were bastards. As a former police officer, it would appear that he's got offside with just about every copper in Australia.
Yeah, look, Ray, I've seen reports of it, and I mean, it's hard to understand what he bases his argument on or his statement on. Strangely enough, I mean, I've been in Parliament a while now, and it's been a while since I left the police force, but occasionally, if I'm making a speech, I'll get interjected on by members of the Labor Party about police background and derogatory remarks that they make, and not based on anything other than just prejudice. And I think most people in our community respect the work that our police officers do, particularly the police community that will be hurting a lot in Parramatta. And they face an uphill battle every day. They've got one hand tied behind their back half the time because of the courts and the legal process. And all they want in the end is to provide a safe community for Australians to live in. And when we see comments like this, I just think it's a slap in the face for those hard-working police officers. And if the senator or anybody else has a complaint to make, well, we live in a civilised society and there are checks and balances in place, make a complaint. But if you're just out there grandstanding, seeking a headline to try and promote yourself, then I think people see through that pretty quickly, and people will pass judgment on that sort of behaviour at the ballot box at the next election.
Let's hope they do next time he gets we get a crack at him, which will unfortunately be another 6 years or so. He's there for 7 years in total. It's just beyond anyone's belief, particularly as you got a rails run in New South Wales calling himself a Liberal Democrat. So he got on the back of your party, and of course then he drew the poll position on the ballot paper, which was another flum.
Well, as I say, Ray, I just think people make their judgments on these sort of comments, and if you can't back them up and just after a headline, then, as I say, people should park it in the back of their memories, and when they're walking into the ballot box at the next election, they should allow it to influence their vote.
Now, you've been very tough, and everyone supports this, on outlaw motorcycle gangs, particularly those who are non-citizens. You revoked the visa of Alex Vella. He's stuck in Malta. Good luck. Sam Ibrahim, you're trying to get him back to Lebanon. But there's a report last weekend that other bikies are now trying to lodge citizenship applications on the basis that these blokes have been left overseas, or one's been left and you're trying to send one back. Will they be successful in those applications?
Well, Ray, we've had one case which has gone to the High Court that's been decided in the government's favour, and we're just not going to take a backward step where these outlaw motorcycle gangs are involved, because people should remember that the outlaw motorcycle gangs are the biggest distributors of amphetamines. That includes ICE. They are the biggest manufacturers, distributors of the drug, and they are destroying lives. And if you're here as a non-citizen on a visa and you're committing a crime as serious as that, well, you can expect to have your visa cancelled. And we'll go through the normal legal processes, and we'll defend in court the appeals that they appeal to the court on. But in the end, we are on pretty sure legal ground, and I have a team of lawyers within the department that scrutinises each of these cases. We cancel the visas according to law and based on the person's own behaviour. And it's not just the outlaw motorcycle gang members, it's the paedophiles as well. We've cancelled a record number of visas for people that have committed sexual offences against children in our society, and I believe that we're making our community safer. It's full steam ahead as far as the government's concerned, because I think that's what the Australian public wants. They want us to make sure that if people who are visitors and guests in our country who are committing offences, they should have their visas cancelled, and that's exactly what we're doing. And these outlaw motorcycle gang members are cashed up because they're involved in the distribution of drugs, they're involved in extortion of small business people, they don't have legitimate jobs, and they're out there creating havoc in society. So they've got plenty of cash, and the lawyers are happy to accept it, but we will defend the decisions that we've made, and I think the community would expect us to do that.
Just on the pedophile rings, Robert Dolly Dunn, there's a pedophile who was part of his operation in the 80s. He's now battling deportation, we read over the weekend, after having served his minimum sentence, would you believe, for just 4.5 years. Now, we've already deported 33 pedophiles since last December. You've either cancelled or preparing to cancel the visas of more than 100 child sex offenders who don't have citizenship. This bloke just uses the legal system, from what I've read, to try and usurp the end result, and that's him going back to the States. And I made the point, had he been arrested and found guilty in the States, Minister, he would have been facing a lot more than 4.5 years, probably 44 and a half years back there.
Well, Ray, I'm obviously the decision-maker in relation to that particular case, and it's on appeal. That's what I understand is the process at the moment. So I don't want to comment in relation to the individual case, but I can say, as a general comment, we've got about 50 people in detention at the moment that have been that have had their visas cancelled, that I've cancelled the visas of people that have been involved in child sex offences. And as I say, if we can round more people up, we will, because it's one of the most heinous crimes. I worked in the child and sex offences sport when I was in the police many years ago, and you know, taking statements from parents, distraught parents, from young kids who have been violated by these people. It's just an horrific crime, and I think we are doing the right thing by kids when we cancel these visas, and we'll defend the cancellations, and people will be deported as they have been already. And we're working with the police forces around the country to identify who these people might be, and we're going to increase the number of cancellations wherever possible, because people that commit sexual offences against children are the worst people in our society, and I don't think anybody's out there defending them. And certainly from my perspective, we'll be doing whatever we can to deport them as quickly as possible.
Thanks for your time. Have a safe journey home.
Thanks very much, Ray. Take care. I'll speak soon. Thanks, mate.
Immigration Minister Peter Dutton. He joins me every Thursday. He's in transit in Dubai on the way back, of course, from Jordan. And that's how important he thinks it is that he talked to you. We thought it'd be difficult, given that he's getting off one flight, getting onto another, in transit in Dubai. But he said, no, I wanted to make sure that I maintained our Thursday chat, and he did exactly that, and we appreciate the efforts he's gone to. The Ray Hadley Morning Program, 2GB, 2CC, 4BC, and stations right across Australia. A couple of emailers telling me about this one, and hoping that David Lionhelm, he the half-wit, is listening. A cyclist is lucky to be alive after falling into the path of a truck while not wearing a helmet in Sydney's southwest yesterday. 5:30 in the afternoon, emergency services were called to the Cumberland Highway, Cabramatta West, following reports of a cyclist being hit by a vehicle. It's believed the 40-year-old man was riding along the middle of the road when he fell into the path of an oncoming truck travelling northbound. Police and paramedics were called. The 40-year-old sustained head injuries, taken to Liverpool Hospital in a critical condition. He's since improved to be stable. Police have now confirmed the man was not wearing a helmet at the time. The driver of the truck, a 49-year-old man, was taken to Liverpool Hospital for mandatory drug and alcohol testing. Investigations are continuing. There's this dreadful story today written by Louise Hall in Fairfax. Kevin Crump was described by a former premier in the state of New South Wales as evil incarnate. He's 66, one of the state's current longest-serving prisoners, having been in jail for 42 years for the rape, torture and murder of housewife Virginia Morse and the shooting murder of itinerant worker Ian Lamb in 1973. In sentencing Crump and his co-accused Alan Baker in 1974, Justice Robert Taylor said the pair should never be released. If ever there's a case where life imprisonment should mean life imprisonment for the whole of your lives, this is it. I think this is one of the cases where one of the judiciary members at the time said anyone thinking of clemency down the track should think of the clemency they showed their victims. In 1997, Crump's sentence was redetermined to a maximum of 30 years. That expired November 12, 2003. But after a public outcry, the New South Wales government, and we led that public outcry in 2003, made legislative changes to ensure Crump and nine others would never get out. In 2012, Crump lost a high court challenge to the laws, meaning he'll remain behind bars until he's so physically incapacitated or close to death he poses no risk. He remains at Wellington Jail despite becoming eligible for parole 12 years ago. Appearing via video link in the New South Wales Court of Criminal Appeal, Crump pleaded for another chance to appeal his life sentence, saying it was not in the worst category of murder cases. I've read the details of what he did with his co-accused to that poor, poor woman. And the Morse family, and I recently heard from Brian Morse, the widower, they shouldn't be subjected to this sort of nonsense. This bastard should rot in jail. And I do mean rot. Out of the Courier-Mail, it's been more than 2 years of heartache for Natalie Leaney's family, but yesterday they received the news her killer was found guilty of murder. Deborah and Malcolm Leaney sobbed in relief when the Brisbane Supreme Court jury handed down its verdict after 3 hours of deliberations. Miss Leaney's boyfriend, Christopher Charles Kawani, 31, did not visibly react when he learned he would serve a mandatory life sentence. That doesn't mean life in Queensland, of course. His defence team had tried to argue he did not mean to shoot the 26-year-old woman who he'd been dating for 6 months during a heated argument outside their home south of Brisbane in March of 2013. Mr. Leaney said it had been a traumatic rollercoaster ride since his daughter's death. I think he got what he deserves. Well, that and a bit more, I would think, for the murder of their beautiful daughter. The time is a quarter to the hour.
On the Ray Hadley Morning Show, traffic for AustralianFleetSales.com.au.
Now, the M4 still rather busy through Mays Hill down to James Roos Drive, also the Ryde Bridge heading up towards Top Ryde. From the Gladesville Bridge, delays continue Victoria Road all the way over the Anzac Bridge into the city. Cameray, we still have a lot of traffic on the freeway near Miller Street heading down towards the Harbour Bridge and Tunnel. Out of Brighton, the Sands, heavy traffic on General Holmes Drive and Southern Cross Drive up to the Moore Park area. And Fairford Road still rather busy northbound around Canterbury Road onto Stacey Street. This is Ian Wallace for the Ray Hadley Morning Show.
Renovating? This Sunday at Beaumont Tiles, learn DIY tiling basics. Get style tips from Kyle and Cara, free snags and DIY bargains. 12 p.m. at Beaumont's North Manly.
I'm just going back through my notes in relation to this creature, Kevin Crump, and I'll give you the exact quote from Justice Taylor when he sentenced Crump originally back in 1974. And I'm proud to say that in 2003, I lobbied heavily with the Carr Labor government in New South Wales to ensure this bastard didn't get out. This is what Justice Taylor said at sentencing. If in the future some application is made that you be released on the grounds of clemency or mercy, then I would venture to suggest to those who are entrusted with the task that the measure of your entitlement should be the clemency or mercy you extended to this woman when she begged for her life. That's what he said. And I hope the appellant court, listen to the words of Justice Taylor from way back in 1974. Three people have been arrested and charged over an alleged drug supply syndicate operating in the Northern Beaches and Sydney metropolitan area. By the way, it's now been confirmed by police that that incident at Toowoomba Hospital, a hoax. Strikeforce Enigma was formed by Northern Beaches LAC to investigate a large-scale supply of cocaine. Following inquiries yesterday, a 53-year-old man was stopped while driving a vehicle in Revesby. A search of the vehicle resulted in police locating 30 grams of cocaine. The man was arrested and charged with three offences, including supply of prohibited drug commercial quantity. He's been refused bail before Bankstown local court today. 8:45 a.m, detectives from the Northern Beaches LAC with assistance of Southwest Metropolitan Regional Enforcement Dog Squad, Public Order Riot Squad, the Gordon Region Enforcement Squad and the Police Dog Unit went to Punchbowl. They located and seized 800 grams of cannabis, 60 grams of cocaine, $38,000 in cash, numerous guns and weapons, including a replica pistol and a Shawnoff shotgun, ammunition, digital money counters, an unopened safe believed to contain a sum of cash. A 25-year-old man was subsequently arrested and charged with five offences, including possessing prohibited drugs, supplying the same drugs in dotable quantity, and so on. Proceeds of crime. He's been bail refused. He's before Bankstown Local Court. Then there was a search warrant executed at Concord and another one at Picnic Point, 93 grams of cocaine, 312 grams of an unidentified white powder, 130 grand in cash. A 48-year-old man was arrested and charged with 10 offences, including possessing an unauthorised firearm, possessing ammunition, indictable supply offences and dealing in the proceeds of crime. He's also before Bankstown Local Court. Six people have now been charged under Strike Force Enigma. Good to have your company. 131873 is the open line number. Tony's in Goulburn listening to through 2GN. Would you mind giving a cheer to my dear mum and dad, Janet and Don Baxter, who are celebrating their 60th wedding anniversary today? They're both avid listeners of the Ray Hadley Morning Show, and they love your country music show as well, The Countdown. I'm sure they'd be delighted if you could recognise this achievement. Love and best wishes from all family members, including your eight beautiful grandchildren. Well, I'm more than happy for two loyal listeners like Janet and Don Baxter in Goulburn on 2GN to send and convey my very best wishes. So all the best to you for a big day, your 60th wedding anniversary, and keep listening to the Ray Hadley Morning Program and the Country Music Countdown. Ray, I know you're busy. Could you say bon voyage and happy birthday to my mother-in-law, Connie Elliott, who's going back to the UK this weekend. She's been here for 2 months, found you, and is now your biggest fan. The whole concept of podcast is lost on her, but she's going to be podcasting you when she gets home. So happy birthday to you, Connie, and have a wonderful and safe trip back to the UK, and thank you for joining us over the past couple of months. After the break, some news, and back with the second hour. And good to have your company on the Ray Hadley Morning Program on this Thursday morning. Welcome back to stations who've been with us, and welcome to the program for those stations in rural Queensland who've just joined us. It's nice to have your company. And we mentioned in the first hour of the program, unfortunately, Toowoomba not with us, but you would have been updated with your local stories there. 4GR, 8:64 a.m. There was a bomb threat at Toowoomba Hospital, but it was deemed to be a hoax, and it's business as usual at the hospital now. Thank you to David Burton, the program director from the Southern Cross station there, that advised me of that earlier. Good on you, Dave. And we're right across that now. The weather... And it's wet, and I hope it's really tumbling down where you need it. In parts of Queensland, there's some showers expected for Brisbane. And by the way, 4BC, you'll be with me for about the next 20 minutes or so, and then you'll be crossing to your cricket coverage. As I mentioned at the top of the show, it's not a decision I've taken. It's a decision of the network. If you've got a complaint, direct your complaints to either our program. We'll pass them on to 4BC. Nothing I can do about it. Maryborough, partly cloudy, 31. Harvey Bay, partly cloudy, 29. Townsville, possible showers on 31. Charters Towers, storms and showers there, 34. Toowoomba, the same. Storm and showers, 29. Kingaroy, shower or two, possible storm, 32. Charleville, shower or two, possible storm, 35. Mount Isa, shower or two, possible storm, 34. Longreach, shower or two, possible storm, 35. Emerald, storms and showers, 35. Roma and Wallumbilla, showers and storms, 34. Dalby, showers and storms, 33. St George, showers and storms, 34. Gundawindi, showers, storms, 33. And Cunnamulla, they say a possible shower there as well, and 34 degrees. I meant to look at the Bureau rain map as well, the rain radar, and I'm looking at it nationally at the moment. There's a big band of cloud and obviously rain across central Queensland, up towards northwestern Queensland. Let me just go to Longreach and have a look there on that. Yeah, a little bit of scattered rain about Longreach at the moment, looking at the map there. I'll go to the Isa and see if I can see it, the Isa. Ooh. Now, looking at Mount Isa, there's rain to the east at the moment, almost into Cloncurry. Almost into Cloncurry at the moment. Looks to be pretty heavy rain, and it's a band that goes from Quamby and Urquhart. Ooh. Let me have a look and see how far down it goes there for our listeners in that area. Yeah, probably looking at that, about 100K band across that region, which is east of Mount Isa at the moment. And if I go back into, say, Toowoomba, I'll have a look at that now, and I can't see too much rain in that region just at the moment, but they say it will be tumbling down a little bit later, so we'll keep an eye on that as well. And looking at Brisbane at the moment, bit of rain to the south around the Tweed, but nothing over the Brisbane metropolitan area at the moment. And, ooh, look at that. there's a lot of rain, a lot of rain, inland from Coffs Harbour, and extends all the way down to Crowdy Head, so south of Port Macquarie. And it's hitting Narrabri at the moment. It's gone through Coonamble and Coonabarabin, and it's hitting Tamworth at the moment as well, and Armidale. So that's some really heavy rain there in the northwestern sector. I note the Hawkesby races are off today as well in northwestern Sydney. But they're going to have a phantom meeting, which is good news for all concerned. So they're going to have the normal fare for Ladies' Day. Dawny Perfect, as I mentioned earlier, is out of the Oaks. Jimmy Cassidy still has three rides. She's suffered an injury, Dawny Perfect, and she won't be running. She'll probably be spelled now. Yeah, Hawkesbury's having a phantom meeting today. The track too heavy to race on, but all corporate events are going on as scheduled, and Fashions in the Field be held in the Bookmakers Ring undercover. And there you go. So it's a phantom meeting where they still have the bookmakers operating in the tote, and you can go and enjoy that, but there won't be any local races at Hawkesbury because of the state of the track. 131873 is the open line number, 2gb.com. John's out at Western Sydney. What's happened, John?
Hi, g'day, Ray. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Oh, Woodville Road, heading towards Parramatta when you turn right, or you wait to turn right onto Parramatta Road at the Vauxhall Inn there.
Yes, mate, I know what you mean.
It's just taking me about an hour to drive from Fairfield Road to Woodville Road, and I rang the RMS because I haven't heard anything on your traffic reports about it.
Yes.
And they tell me there's a Telstra problem with the lights. They're not getting much of a right turn phase, and they're not going to be able to fix it for quite a while.
So
that's why everyone's sitting on Woodville Road.
At the Vauxhall Inn at Parramatta you're talking about, that intersection there.
Yep.
Well, mate, I've got about eight calls looking down the page saying the same thing. Bad traffic, Woodville Road, coming back towards Parramatta, standstill, not moving. Are you saying they can't fix it because it's Telstra?
Yeah, they're saying they've got a problem with the Telstra lines and they've told the technician, but it's not a quick fix.
Oh, we'll see if we can get it fixed a bit quicker than that. Thanks, John, for the tip. I appreciate it. I mean, that's a really major artery into Parramatta from the southwest, Woodville Road. And sure, I mean, has anyone thought about getting a policeman, turning them off and getting someone there on point duty? Have they thought about that? Ian Wallace, have you heard that call as I go to you now?
Yeah, I just heard the call, Ray. No, I know nothing about it. I was just sitting here listening. I'll go and try and find out and see what is actually going on with those lights.
Well, if someone were to ring Parramatta LAC or Rose Hill LAC, I'm sure they could get a couple of police officers there. If it's going to be a few hours, and get someone doing some point duty.
Absolutely. I'll go check with the chief in here at the TMC.
Okay, thanks, mate. Leave it in your capable hands. 131873. Arthur's in Maryborough. G'day, Arthur.
How are you?
I'm really well, Arthur. Thanks for asking.
Yes. Did you have a look at the Chronicle this morning?
The Toowoomba Chronicle?
No, Maryborough.
Oh, Maryborough. No, mate, I haven't read it. Tell me what's happened.
Well, the wife's been... She's been in hospital and she's broke her pelvis. And she's been in hospital about...
Oh, hang on. Someone sent me an email about this. Is your wife one of the ladies that's been robbed by some cleaner?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, yes, no. Now I know what you're talking about.
They had the case on Tuesday.
Yes.
And she got sentenced to it. She got off anyway.
The woman that did it, why don't I just bring the story? You stay there, mate. Don't go away. I'll bring the story up and I'll go through it with you, Arthur, and we'll talk in some detail. Because the report that was sent to me by one of our listeners actually named the person involved. So you stay exactly where you are. Don't hang up. And we'll come back and have a yarn about it. Because I think from what the lady told me that sent me the email, not related to you, obviously, about your wife, is there still a ring missing? And part of the condition... Oh, here it is. I've got it now. Here it is. Fraser Coast Chronicle. That's the one. Fraser Coast Chronicle.
Yeah.
I got it in front of me, Arthur. Okay. Your wife is Gloria. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay, here it is. Let me just share it with other people and then we'll come back to you. Stay exactly where you are, old mate. A woman has been left unable to trust people in her own home after her cleaner stole five sentimental rings, including her engagement ring. Gloria Tunstall, 85, is one of four elderly or ill women who had their jewellery stolen by Tina Marie Ansell while she was cleaning their homes in the Maryborough region. Ansell, 51, escaped jail time despite pleading guilty in the magistrate's court to taking thousands of dollars of jewellery from four people's homes. The court heard Ansell was caught after her son sold a significant amount of jewellery to a pawnbroker, including a ring which had been stolen. Mrs. Tunstall had made an impassioned plea to see the return of her engagement ring given to her by her husband, and that's Arthur on the line now, 67 years ago. The only piece of jewellery not retrieved after the crimes. The Maryborough woman has been in hospital for 11 weeks when she received a call from her cleaning service after Ansel was discovered to have taken jewellery from another lady's home. It was then she found the five rings missing. I feel terrible. Another woman, Barbara Wilde, is suffering terminal gall and liver cancer, has also have trouble trusting people when Ansel stole a priceless ring from her home. The ring, which was taken 2 days before her 40th wedding anniversary, was moulded from two rings from her mother and grandmother. Dear, oh dear. The other victims of Ansel's crimes were in their 80s, and also the wives of returned servicemen. Magistrate Dean Wilkinson this week sentenced Ansel to 6 months' prison to be suspended for 18 months. The offence has been committed while you're in a position of trust, providing care for people who are vulnerable. Ansel has resigned from her position at Suncare. Suncare CEO Russell Mason said as soon as the organisation learnt of the crimes, Ansel was stood down. We've been in operation now for 45 years. It's the first time we've had any employee in this position. They've also conducted a review of their procedures of hiring staff. So, Arthur, is that ring still missing? Is it your engagement ring?
Yes, he hadn't got it.
Dear, oh dear. And
they rang the other day and they said the insurance, they must have insurance.
Yeah.
They're not going to pay anything. And
Who rang? Suncare?
Yeah.
What, and they said they won't pay insurance?
Yeah, the insurance wouldn't pay anything on Suncare. Reckon they're not going to pay anything either.
Who told you that?
The woman that rang up. She works for Suncare down there, the boss, but the main boss is away over in England, I think.
Russell Mason is the CEO. Well, we better talk to Mr. Mason.
Just a lady.
Okay, well, we'll try and track down Russell Mason. In the meantime, surely the magistrate has the capacity to compel this woman to tell the court where that ring is or where she left it or sold it or did something with it.
Yeah, well, they were all together and she got the lot of them.
Okay. All right, Arthur, can you just stay there for me, mate? I don't want to cause any more drama for you. But we'll chase that up and try and talk to Mr. Mason about at least giving you restitution for the stolen ring for his employer who stole it, okay?
Yeah, thanks, Ray.
All right, Arthur, don't you go away. And Arthur would obviously be a gentleman, I guess, close to 90, if not in excess of 90, given he's been married for 67 years. Dear, oh dear, oh dear. Jason, we've got a breakdown on the Western Distributor. What's happened there, Jason?
Bridge as you run across the top of Darling Harbour there on the lead up to the Harbour Bridge.
Yes.
Just causing it. It's pretty slow there, mate, in the wet, so the traffic's pretty heavy there at the moment.
Okay, thanks, Jason. Good man. So we've got a breakdown, Western Distributor right-hand lane heading towards the Harbour Bridge. Thank you very much for that. The Executive Director of the Clarence River Jockey Club, Michael Beatty, they had their Jacaranda Cup meeting yesterday. I was listening to a replay of it this morning in at work very early. Michael Beatty, an old mate of mine, on the line. G'day, Michael.
Yeah, good morning to you, Ray.
And I believe it's not good news you bring my listeners today.
No, it's not, Ray. It's very, very sad news. I suppose he was really a sporting caller, but certainly well known as a race caller on the mid-north coast of New South Wales, Dick Hillard, who lived in Kempsey for many, many years and has been fighting illness recently in Port Macquarie Hospital, very sadly passed away this morning.
Oh, my goodness.
For me, it somehow seems appropriate that it's happened so close to the Kempsey Cup meeting, which is on tomorrow, because the one thing that will ensure in years to come is that everybody will remember Dick's great contribution to racing in the northern part of the state.
Well, he was a great mate of mine. David Morrow and I went up there, over 20 years ago, on the Kempsey Cup day at Warwick Park and called a race each in the company of Dick. And I had a memorable night out with Dick at a local Chinese restaurant that night.
I'm amazed you've recovered already.
Well, Dick would love me to tell the story again. What happened, Dick was known to have long pockets and short arms. And I was on the punt back in those days, Michael, and I'd had a very successful day on the punt. And so I said to my friends who were with me and Dick, I'll take you out for a feed. So we converged on a local motel, which doubled as a local Chinese restaurant. And there were probably 10 or 12 of us there, and we had a belly full of food, and there was plenty drunk as well. And Dick excused himself towards the end of the night to go to the bathroom. So I paid the bill, but then said to the people running the restaurant, when Dick comes out of the bathroom, we all went and waited outside and looking through the window, tell him that we'd left and we said that he'd be fixing things up. and the bill came to about $300 or $400 from memory. Well, he came out of the bathroom, and the lady behind the counter was explaining to him that we'd gone and explained that he'd be settling the bill. Well, he started going on, "No, that bloke Hadley said he'd paid. I'm not paying." And we were watching him through the window.
I am amazed, knowing Dick, that he actually forgave you. But no, he was a terrific fellow. He knew how to have a great night out. I had a number of fairly long nights out with Dick. I've got to say, I normally found the bed a long time before he did. But yeah. He was a terrific fellow. And you talked about yourself and David going up and calling race meetings or races at meetings where Dick was the chief caller. There's nothing better he loved than letting someone else get on the microphone, and yeah. He really loved his racing, he loved his sport, and he is a really big loss to racing up here. He hasn't been on the airwaves for quite some time now, probably about 12 years, but he's still done all the non-TAB meetings up here.
Yeah, I know that.
Looked after the club. It's been terrific.
Yeah. Well, we've lost a mate whom I love dearly, and I'm very sorry to hear it. I know that he'd been not well because my colleagues at 2MCFM had told me recently he was really battling. And so I really appreciate you jumping on the phone, Michael, and letting our audience know, particularly on the mid-north coast of New South Wales, we lost a fantastic friend.
Yeah, good on you. Thanks, Ray.
Thank you. Michael Beattie, the Executive Director of the Clarence River Jockey Club, Grafton. And my condolences to Dick's family and to all the people in Kempsey and Port Macquarie, Maxville and surrounding areas that knew and loved Dick. Just a fantastic fella. And it's most unfortunate and sad that so close to the Kempsey Cup, we won't be hearing Dick at Warwick Park in the future. But our love goes to his family and his many, many friends. May he rest in peace. Twenty past the hour.
On the Ray Hadley Morning Show, traffic for AustralianFleetSales.com.au.
And from the M4, Parramatta Road, still rather busy. Eastbound into Five Dock, Merrylands, very slow traffic on Woodville Road, northbound up to Parramatta Road. There is a problem with the traffic lights there. The RMS and Telstra are working on the problem now. Drummoyne, Victoria Road, still very heavy traffic all the way into the city over the Anzac Bridge. Around Mascot, General Holmes Drive, Southern Cross Drive, still very busy as you make your way up to the Moore Park area. And Dulwich Hill, got a breakdown, New Canterbury Road, just near Marrickville Road. This is Ian Wallace for the Ray Hadley Morning Show.
Shell V-Power is designed to improve your car's performance. Fill up today and you could win one of 2,000 fuel vouchers. T's and C's at shellvpower.com.au.
It's good to have your company. 131873 is that open line number. 2gb.com. Click on the feedback icon. You know, we've had a bit of a result. You might remember I took a call on Monday from Craig, who's the manager of a pool in Brisbane South West. Some time ago, a woman left her 2 5-year-olds, twins, a 9-year-old and a 10-year-old, alone at the pool and took off. Craig, as the manager of the pool, noticed the woman driving away and immediately pulled the 4 kids out of the water. After about an hour, Craig called the police because none of the children knew their mother's contact details or where they lived, and none of them could swim. He ended up having to babysit the abandoned kids for around 3 hours waiting for the mother to show up. He said none of the children knew how to swim. The mother had been told upon entry the 2 youngest children, being the 5-year-olds, could not swim without her in the water with them. She had agreed to those conditions. Now, when the mother finally returned, she gave no explanation of her absence. She simply grabbed the children and took off. Craig had asked her to remain at the pool until police arrived, but as soon as he said the police were on the way, she went straight to a car. Now, he did manage to take down the rego as she was leaving the car park, which he passed on to police when they arrived a short time later. I asked Craig if language had been a barrier, but he assured me she was fluent in English and fully understood what he was talking about and what she was doing. I told Craig we would follow the matter up with Queensland Police, which we did. They said this: further inquiries have been conducted in relation to this matter, and police subsequently located the mother of the children, who was the registered owner of the vehicle seen at the swimming pool. Police have since counselled the woman regarding the current legislation as it applies to leaving children under 12 unattended. They then directed us to the section of the Criminal Code in Queensland that says, if a person who having the lawful care or charge of a child under 12 leaves the child for an unreasonable time without making reasonable provision for the supervision and care of the child during that time, they commit a misdemeanor. Maximum penalty, 3 years imprisonment. 2, whether the time is unreasonable depends on all the relevant circumstances. We then contacted the, Queensland Department of Communities, Child Safety, to see if this family was named to Child Services. They took all the details, but of course couldn't comment on the individual matter. But they certainly are following it up. Now, it's really good that Craig went to all the trouble to contact us, and it's really good that police investigated the matter and counselled the mother against her treatment of her own children, young children, leaving them unattended in a pool for that long. Disgraceful, absolutely disgraceful. And hopefully she's learned a valuable lesson. Queensland paramedics are currently attending a fire at Sandy Creek Road at Yatala on the Gold Coast. One patient has been declared deceased at the scene. There are no other patients, according to Greg Stoltz, senior journalist for the Courier Mail. It was an oil factory fire. And we're trying to make contact with Queensland Ambulance for more information. Yatala, of course, is a northern suburb of the Gold Coast and famous for the Yatala pies. Queensland paramedics at the scene of that at the moment. One patient deceased at the scene. No other patients to report in relation to the fire at Yatala, of course, which is on the Gold Coast. And a Gold Coast woman caught driving on a suspended licence seven times was yesterday handed a minimum sentence possible for her eighth offence, a fine of $450 and 1 month off the road. Well, who's the magistrate? Magistrate Chris Bernadette's brother, Chris Callahan. He's the chief magistrate down there. Hohaya is her name. Her name is Kara Hohaya. Pleaded guilty in the Southport Magistrates Court to driving on a licence that had been suspended. The eighth offence. Eighth offence. So he suspends it for 1 month and gives her a $450 fine. He then said she had an appalling traffic record and had disobeyed court orders. I hope you don't disobey this order. Well, you've given her a slap on the wrist, Chris. You wouldn't blame her if she disobeyed you. 4BC are about to leave us right now because they're off to the cricket, as I said. Any complaints, direct them to 4BC. It's good to have you company. 131873 is the open line number. A teenage girl has allegedly been stabbed in the stomach by a man in Toowoomba overnight. Police say the 17-year-old was... they found a man in the back out of a house at 11 p.m. The young lady challenged the man. A short altercation broke out. The man allegedly stabbed the teenager in the stomach before fleeing. He's described as being Caucasian, aged about 20, 165 centimetres tall and of medium to solid build, facial stubble. The 17-year-old was treated at Toowoomba Base Hospital. Her injuries are described as non-life-threatening. And from Orange to GZFM, a 15-year-old Orange boy sat in the dock of the Orange local court on Monday when he was told he used up all his chances given by the courts. He'll be now held in full-time custody in juvenile detention. The magistrate, Terry Lucas, said he was reluctant to pass sentence on the boy who'd breached suspended control orders. I don't know what to say to you because I don't like what I have to do. You have breached three suspended control orders and one bond. I have no other option. Terry Lucas considered the reports before him from juvenile justice and other welfare agencies about the boy's non-compliance with turning up to appointments, which are in place as part of the control order. The boy's Aboriginal legal aid solicitor, Raina Pettit, told the court her client had gone to the Office of Juvenile Justice last Friday but failed to maintain contact in the preceding weeks. Ms Pettit asked the court to consider an alternative of allowing the boy to go to Walgett to live with his mother. His mother plans to get him back into school. There's a problem with his mother not being in Orange to support her son. She has to go back to Walgett to get care for a mother who is ill. She doesn't want her son staying in Orange. Mr Lucas told the boy when control orders involving close supervision were put in place, he had an obligation to follow the rules. The system will beat you every time, but I wish you good luck for the future. The boy's eligible for release May next year. He'd previously been convicted of aggravated break and enter, harassing and intimidating school staff, and several counts of maliciously damaging property. Unless there's some intervention with this young fella, he'll end up in the adult criminal system sometime down the track. Jason has phoned. There's a problem on Pennant Hills Road for our listeners on 2GB in Sydney. A car and caravan on Pennant Hills Road have broken down in the right-hand lane, unfortunately, the overtaking lane, after Thompson's Corner at West Pennant Hills. So I repeat, there's a car and caravan on Pennant Hills Road broken down northbound in the right-hand lane just past the West Pennant Hills Shopping Centre and the garage on the left-hand side and the bottle shop. Thank you for that, Jason. If you're coming up the hill past the golf club on your right, just be careful because you'll find in the right-hand lane we have, of course, the car and caravan broken down. 131873 is our open line number. Little Lily's on the line from Carathool. Hello, Lily.
Hello, Ray.
Where are you, Little Lily?
I'm in Dubbo.
What are you doing in Dubbo?
Charlie's cricket.
Oh, you spend your life following your sister around to watch all the sporting events, eh? If it's not AFL, it's cricket.
Yeah, It's the Girls Cricket State Carnival.
Is it in Dubbo? Is it raining in Dubbo or is the weather nice?
It was raining this morning, but now it's very sunny.
It's very sunny. So the cricket will go ahead, will it?
Yes.
That's fantastic. So who is she playing for in the state competition?
Charlie's playing for the Riverina team.
The Riverina team. And is Charlie a fast bowler or a batsman or a spin bowler?
She's a middle bowler and she is very good at batting.
So she's an all-rounder, basically.
Yeah.
She's a very good all-round sportswoman, isn't she? Because she can play a whole range of sports, your sister.
Yeah. She's taken a few wickets this morning.
Already?
Yeah.
How did she take them? She bowled them or they get caught or stumped? What happened?
Well, she's caught a few. She's bowled some as well, and we've been here all week.
What, since Monday?
Yes.
Oh, dear. Have you got chairs to sit on to watch the cricket?
Yeah.
Do you get a little bit bored, or are you happy to watch it all day?
I'm happy to watch it all day.
You're a good sister. Okay, Lily, will you keep supporting your sisters? And I love hearing from you, and I hope you have a nice day in Dubbo today, okay?
Yeah, and today's my dad's birthday, so I'd like to wish him a happy birthday for today.
Poor old fella. How old is he?
I don't know.
Oh, come on. Do you reckon he's 50?
I think he's...
38?
I don't know.
You don't know, you little giggler.
No.
You better find out next year before you wish him happy birthday, okay?
Yeah.
I reckon, let me figure this out. How old's Charlie?
Charlie is 12.
12. Now, you're 11?
Yes.
I reckon your dad is 35. Close enough?
41.
He's what?
41.
Poor old thing. I took 6 years off him. All right, Lily. Good luck, darling. Have a good day at the cricket.
Yeah.
See you, Lily.
Love you, Ray.
Love you, little Lily. Nice to hear from you again. She comes from Carrathool in the southern part of New South Wales, and she's in Dubbo in the western part of New South Wales at the moment. 26 and a half to the hour.
Macquarie National News.
Erin, g'day.
Good morning, Ray. Multi-faith leaders are in discussions in Sydney to determine how Australia can better protect religious freedom. A father and son have been woken in the middle of the night in their Albury home by a couple with a knife and a baseball bat. An iconic pub has been destroyed and several other businesses damaged in an early morning fire at Gatton in southeast Queensland. And police in the US have arrested a man on suspicion of attempted murder in the stabbing of US Airman Spencer Stone, one of three Americans who thwarted a train attack in France. In sport, the summer of cricket is underway with the first test between Australia and New Zealand about to start in Brisbane. Australia will be batting first after Steve Smith won the toss. Ray, more news in about 26 minutes.
Well done, thank you. A young bloke called Adam Hart has sent me an email and a photo as well. Very sad to hear the passing of race caller Dick Hellard. I had the pleasure of meeting Dick only once earlier this year, but he left a lasting impression I'll never forget. He let me call my first race at Tuncurry back in February this year and watched over my shoulder the whole time to make sure I did all right. He is a great man, sorely missed. An aspiring young race caller got his break thanks to Dick Hillard. And there's a great photo of you, Adam, with my old mate Dickie. Look at him. Dickie, he's a good man, Dickie Hillard. He was a great man, and we've lost him today. 131873 is the open line number if you would like to join us. 2gb.com if you would like to get me there as well. In the meantime, 131873 is that open line number. That story I mentioned just briefly, Cara, Ohio. Now, I'm just checking the details from the Gold Coast Bulletin. Suspended seven times, or caught driving on a suspended license seven times, got the minimum sentence possible for an eighth offence. Minimum sentence. The prosecutor, Sergeant Nicole Condides, said Hawaya told police she'd just returned to Australia from New Zealand and could have outstanding issues with her licence. She said the woman was also recently changed her name before giving birth to her child. The defendant knew of issues with her licence, however stated she was going to deal with it. It appears police intercepted her prior to this. The sergeant said Hawaya had an extensive traffic history, had previously been jailed for traffic offences. The court has... Well, if you get jailed for traffic offences, it's pretty serious. Hawaya had an extensive traffic history. The court was told Hawaya had been charged with driving whilst disqualified seven times, with the last offence 4 years ago. The solicitor from Gatenby Criminal Lawyers said a client fixed up the suspension on the day of the incident after receiving a cash advance from her employer. In the past, she clearly didn't grasp the severe consequences of driving whilst disqualified. Being from New Zealand, she was not entitled to financial assistance, and if she didn't work, she basically wouldn't eat or live. I'm instructed that all the disqualified drives were simply her travelling to work. She said the circumstances were different this time as a client who works wasn't aware she was committing an offence. There was no conscious decision to break the law. She said Hohaya had not previously had a licence suspended. Her last traffic offence was more than 4 years ago. The magistrate, Chris Callahan, said she had an appalling record and disobeyed court orders in the past, but then fined her just $450 and told her to stay off the road for 1 month. Bizarre, isn't it? 23 to the hour. It's good to have your company. Some reports of lunatic drivers on New South Wales roads are coming through. One in particular that I noticed a bit earlier, down around the Goulburn Way, Hume Highway. There's the police report about it, and I did get a photo from one of my listeners as well, showing a vehicle with a P-plate on it. I think it was a red P-plate from memory, a red P-plate driver. And I think you'll find, yeah, here it is here, from the New South Wales Police Force at 10:10 yesterday morning. A blue Subaru coupe was driven south on the Hume Highway at Maroolan on the way to Goulburn. Police checked the speed of the vehicle on the radar, 162 k's. They did a second check when they caught up to the vehicle, doing 160. The driver, a 31-year-old from Liverpool, held a red P1 licence. He's supposed to be doing 90 k's. The man received an infringement notice on the spot, $2,306. That was 6 points. He doesn't get that many, obviously. His licence was immediately suspended for 6 months and the number plates confiscated for 3 months, so the car's basically unable to be used. Now, on the back of that, the Goulburn Post, the local newspaper for our Goulburn listeners, New South Wales Traffic and Highway Patrol have clocked two cars travelling at 185 near Goulburn, not yesterday but Melbourne Cup Day. 135 on Tuesday in the afternoon, a white BMW and a black VW Passat were travelling southbound at Goulburn on the Hume Highway. Police conducted a speed check using the normal procedures. They clocked one vehicle at a 185 in the 110 zone, then a second vehicle doing the same. Both vehicles had Victorian registration and were driven by Victorian licensed drivers. The driver of the BMW was a 38-year-old male. The black VW, driven by a 30-year-old male, both from Victoria. The drivers are not known to each other. There is a suggestion that perhaps they were street racing. Both vehicles were stopped without incident. Both drivers issued with a court attendance notice for the offences of driving in a manner dangerous and exceeding speed limit by over 45 k's. Police suspended the visiting driver privileges of both vehicles in the state of New South Wales. The black VW was driven by the owner. His vehicle was immediately confiscated for 3 months. The driver is responsible for all towing and holding fees. Now, the driver of the BMW, they couldn't impound it because he's not the registered owner. Traffic and Highway Patrol Commander John Hartley has warned those who choose to break the law will be caught. It's not rocket science. You can imagine the impact if these vehicles came together at that speed. 185. The one unsatisfactory thing about all that is that one bloke gets his car taken off him because he owns it. The other bloke can keep the car because he doesn't own it, so to speak. Not registered in his name. But anyway, they got him just the same. I've received a very instructional email relating to ICAC, the ICAC in New South Wales, in particular outlining how it's not bound by the rules of evidence. Well, we know that for sure and certain via the comments previously made by Megan Latham.
On a concluding note, can I say if any of you get tired of adversarial litigation, inquisitorial litigation is fantastic. You are not confined by the rules of evidence. You have a free kick. You can go anywhere you want to go. And it's a lot of fun.
That's
Thank you.
Megan Latham, the commissioner, talking to a group of lawyers, not bound by the rules of evidence, obviously. It relates this story to the ICAC findings about a mining tenement in the Hunter Valley. The tenement had been granted in 2008 by the then New South Wales Labor Minister Ian McDonald to a company called Doyle's Creek Mining, run by a union boss named John Maitland. But then Doyle's Creek Mining was bought by another company, New Coal, in 2010. New Coal acquired this for, I think, $94 million. It was part of a stock exchange listing. And then they spent another $40 million exploring it. But in 2013, ICAC ruled the initial tenement had been granted by Ian McDonald to his mate John Maitland, basically illegally. What happened next was that New Coal was stripped of the exploration licence for the site, despite buying it 2 years after Ian McDonald had been granted the tenement. Now, the mining licence was worth close to $100 million, and US investors are now saying they won't put money into Australia again after the New South Wales government refused to pay any compensation after the licence was seized. But in the Supreme Court judicial review, it was acknowledged by ICAC that New Coal was an innocent party in all of this. But there's also an interesting aspect of this that I have spoken about before, and that's one of the directors from New Coal, a fellow called Andrew Poole. He went to the Supreme Court to force the insurers to pay his legal costs. In the Supreme Court ruling, Justice James Stevenson remarked that he must determine the case on the basis of the evidence before me, not the basis of findings that may have been made by a tribunal not bound by the rules of evidence, which is ICAC, in which may have been able to consider material not in evidence. The Managing Director of New Coal Resources, Glenn Lewis, has written to me about all of this, and he's on the line right now. Mr. Lewis, g'day.
Hey, g'day, Ray. How are you?
Not bad at all. There was no finding against your company by ICAC, am I right?
Absolutely none. Actually, to the contrary, in the High Court and the Supreme Court, they said that New Coal were completely innocent.
So even if there was an illegality between the Labor Minister, Ian McDonald, and Doyle's Creek Mining in 2008, when you acquired this in 2010, you did it legally and without any restrictions?
That's correct. Through an ASX listing, so we had to jump through all of the hurdles that you have to do to get listed onto the stock exchange in this country.
In that case, given that you've done nothing wrong, and we've seen a settlement recently over coal seam gas on the northern part of New South Wales via the government granting leases and then revoking the leases, why won't there be an ex gratia payment made to your company by the New South Wales government?
Well, at the time when ICAC actually put their final report to the O'Farrell government back in 2013, they recommended innocent parties should be compensated. But for whatever reason, the O'Farrell government chose not to do that. So when the legislation was put through in early 2014, there was no compensation attached to it.
And what, there's no vehicle for you to take the matter any further?
Absolutely not. And that's another issue in this, because they actually legislated away our rights to go to a court to have this matter heard properly rather than through an ICAC circus.
So a recommendation came from ICAC that innocent parties should be compensated, but then there's an Act of Parliament which prevents you from appealing any decision not to grant you compensation.
Exactly, yes.
So
very un-Australian.
So who owns New Coal, Glenn?
New Coal, 3,400 innocent shareholders. About 65% of them would be mum and dad shareholders who put a lot of their superannuation into our company, which was worth $400 million prior to going to ICAC, and we're now worth $2 million.
So it's basically destroyed the company.
Oh, it has, yeah. Yep.
And all those people holding shares in it, down the gurgler with it.
Exactly. The shares were trading at their peak at 62 cents and they're now worth 0.13.
Do you recover from that?
Well, we're not going to give up, Ray. I guess one of the reasons I wrote to you was we wanted to continue to get the message out there that this thing's not going to go away. It's unjust. It's against the rule of law in this country. And we're just going to continue until we get some satisfaction for our innocent shareholders.
And is it right in saying that investors from other parts of the world, or people that you may petition to invest in your company, are saying, oh, no, we won't do business with you if that's the way they run things down there?
Oh, exactly. We've got 30% of the shareholder register overseas, predominantly in the US.
Right.
And two of those are people that have already had stories in the Australian and they refuse to invest in this country until this matter's sorted out. Because, as they rightly say, they've done nothing wrong and they've lost millions of dollars.
Well, given they sorted it out with a $25 million payment to the organisation Metgagas up there on the Northern Rivers, but here you're saying a company worth $400 million is now worth $2 million. I mean, we're talking about a lot more money.
Oh, we certainly are. And at the moment, we've had a number of meetings with the Premier's office.
Yeah.
But really, at this point, they're just standing beside the Mining Amendment Act that the O'Farrell government put through. So, you know, Mike Baird is defending actions of the past, but at the end of the day, they're wrong. It's unjust, un-Australian what they've done to these innocent shareholders of ours.
Well, I'm glad you're talking on their behalf, and now that you've brought all of this to my attention, we'll certainly fight on your behalf, because what we're about here is a fair go, and it appears your shareholders have been dutted through no fault of anyone's.
100% correct, Ray. And it's good that you've got that attitude, because you know these mum and dads need a voice. And one of the issues with what we've been through, you know, once you go through an ICAC process, you're tarred with a brush, you're tainted for life.
Well, I've got to tell you, when my eyes glazed over when I started reading it, NewCo, because all I could think of with NewCo was ICAC.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's all I could think of, mate, until I read the pages and pages of documents and realised that you'd played no role. You were there as a witness and ancillary to the claims in relation to Doyle's Creek Mining, but no fault found with your dealings in relation to inquiries by ICAC. But I'm like everyone else, mate. Every time I read something at that time about ICAC, it was about NewCo. And now we find out by looking at the detail, and the devil's in the detail, that there's no fault on your part.
No, that's right. And that's why it's taken so long, because you know, we've been to the Supreme Court, we've been to the High Court, and it's taken that length of time to actually get the facts into the public domain.
Yeah, okay.
Is really what we're about now.
Thank you for telling me, and we'll continue to fight on behalf of your shareholders, and I'll be talking to you in the future as well. Thanks very much.
Much appreciated, Ray. Thank you.
Thank you. Glenn Lewis, Managing Director of NewCo Resources. Gone from being worth $400 million to being worth $2 million through no fault of their own. Now, we've got an accident. Pia says Beverly Hills, two cars on the M5 eastbound before King George's Road. All lanes affected. So Pia tells me two cars on the M5 eastbound before King George's Road turn off. That's on the M5. All lanes affected. Thank you, Pia. 9 minutes before the news. News comes up in 5 minutes from now.
On the Ray Hadley Morning Show, traffic for AustralianFleetSales.com.au.
West Ryde, Dismas, Victoria Road and Station Street. Now West Pymble, West Pennant Hills, in fact, a breakdown. Pennant Hills Road northbound to Cardinal Avenue. At Pennant Hills, Dismas, Pennant Hills Road southbound near the rail bridge. The Barara Waters Ferry out of service until further notice. Mechanical problems there. Maryland, slow traffic. Woodville Road northbound up to Parramatta Road. Mascot Southern Cross Drive, still very heavy traffic up towards the Moore Park area. And also General Holmes Drive is slow south down to the airport tunnel. This is Ian Wallace for the Ray Hadley Morning Show.
And here's something else worth talking about. Talk it up with Coles Prepaid, backed by Optus. To get started, pick up your SIM card at any Coles today. There's one near you.
Lester phoned from 2CC in Canberra to tell me that his mum, Kathleen, is turning 100 a day. Kathleen, many happy returns from everyone connected with the Ray Hadley Morning Program. Well done to you. Ray Hadley in the Morning on 2GB, 2CC, and stations right across Australia, Macquarie Regional, Southern Cross and Capital Radio Networks. News comes up in 60 seconds from now. It's good to have your company. 131873 is the open line number, 2GB.com. You click onto the feedback icon. I just heard them say that Jimmy Cassidy's only got one ride in the news. Now that the filly's been scratched out of the Oaks, Dawny Perfect, because she had an injury this morning. I'm sure I said three earlier, unless there's been scratching as well. Why don't I just have a look and see here? Because I'm sure he's got three rides. There could be scratchings, because when I did it, the scratchings weren't final much earlier this morning. But we can quickly have a look on the website and tell you whether he's got one, two or three rides. There we go. RESA, which is Racing Australia website. We'll go to the next one, and then that'll take us to Flemington, and we'll check there and see if there have been any scratchings. 131873 is that open line number, 2gb.com. You click on the feedback icon if you would like to join us. Here we go. Racefields Victoria. Down the page we go. Flemington acceptances. Rightio. All the way down the page now. First race, which is on in 1 hour from now. Jay Cassidy, no ride there. Second race, down the page, Jay Cassidy, no ride there. Third race, Jay Cassidy, no ride there. Here we go. Fourth race, James McDonald at top. Well, there's one, Petite's Reward. Jimmy rides it, number 11, race number four. Race number five, which is the 1,800-metre race. No Jay Cassidy there. Race number six, the 1,000-metre race. No Jay Cassidy there, by the look of it. No. Race number seven, which is another 1,100-metre race here. Well, he's got a ride there, Hidden Pearl. So there's two. And the Oaks, of course, well, Dawny Perfect out scratched. And I think he might have a ride in the last. Here he does. He's got three rides, Distant Rock. So he hasn't got one ride at all. He's got three rides. Three rides today. So, yep, three rides. And his last ride will be on Distant Rock for Lee and Anthony Friedman in the last race. He's drawn the car park. He's in Barrier 18 over a mile, so he'll need a bit of masterful riding to get there. So he does have actually three rides today, Jimmy Cassidy. He did have four, but she scratched the filly out of the Oaks, and he's got three rides to go from there. And the last one will be race 9 at 5:20, which brings down the curtain on a wonderful career, a really, really good career. 131873 is that open line number, 2gb.com. You click onto the feedback icon if you would like to join us. A man has been charged with two indecent assaults on trains in Sydney thanks to eagle-eyed officers from the Police Transport Command. The plainclothes officers were conducting a patrol at Chatswood Railway Station yesterday about this time, roughly about this time. The officers followed a man as he travelled on trains between Chatswood and Town Hall. He was seen sitting next to a female passenger and then allegedly indecently assaulting her. They arrested the man and took him to Ryde Police Station. He was subsequently charged with two counts of indecent assault and two counts of common assault. It's alleged the same man indecently assaulted a female on the 9th of October on a train from Central to Macquarie Park. It was the officers from this section, the Transport Action Group, that recognised the alleged offender on the train last month. The 52-year-old now been refused bail and is before Burwood local court today. Well, hopefully they realise that he apparently has offended on separate occasions, allegedly, and they'll do something with him. In other words, keep him off trains in the future or keep him in jail. Although they do have a problem with jails at the moment because they're overcrowded in New South Wales. There's no room to put them anywhere. 131873 is our open line number. The Ray Hadley Morning Program at 9 past the hour. It's good to have your company. 131873 is the open line number, 2gb.com. Ray, I'm at home, says Matt at Little Bay in Sydney with my sick daughter. Great day for a punt. What do you like in the Oaks? Oh, geez, Matt, I'm through there a season. I don't follow them that much. I did watch the win by Ambience last weekend. Had the race run to suit, but I'd be very hard to beat. Look, I don't think it'll come from outside the top three. Ambience, which is number four, Jamaica, number two, or Sacred Eye, which is number three, and is the favourite, by the way, Sacred Eye. So, yeah, I wouldn't be going outside those three, old mate. Two, three, or four. That's the best I can do for you. It'll pay nothing if you get the trifecta box because they're the three favourites. A couple of my listeners have directed me to this one. A Gold Coast pin-up girl named Carly Ironside. There's a photo of Carly there, and it'd be fair to say that Carly's had a fair bit of work done. She's a young woman. She's only 24, and she probably was beautiful before she had the work done, but she's had a stack of work done by the look of it. She's off to the US to be a Playboy bunny, but her new career was almost put on ice yesterday. She pleaded with the Southport magistrate. Now, I've checked his pronunciation. It's K-U-C-K-S. Now, I know what I'd call him, but I thought probably I'd err on the side of caution, call him Brian Cooks. But I'm assured by people on the Gold Coast his name is Brian Cucks. Now, she pleaded with Brian Cucks not to record a conviction after she pleaded guilty to driving under the influence of a drug, unlicensed driving, possessions of drug, a pipe and a knife in a public place. She tried to convince the magistrate, Brian Cucks, that a conviction could have seen her refused admission to the US. Ironside, 24, had taken ice and a prescription drug on October 19 when her car became wedged on the tram tracks near McIntosh Island in Surfers Paradise. After this problem, Ironside tried to do a runner, but was grabbed by a security guard. Obviously, she's not too quick. Police found she was slurring her words and unsteady on her feet, and she said she'd taken ice. The Zoo and Playboy magazine model also had a flick knife, which you do, and a kitchen knife in her bag, which you do. And she said she had these for protection from her 1.5 million social media followers. Her solicitor, Campbell McCallum, said his client wanted to leave the Gold Coast and take up a full-time position, if you'll pardon the expression, with the Playboy Mansion. Her intention is to leave the Gold Coast and take an offer, which I've confirmed, with the Playboy Mansion in LA. How's old Hugh Hefner going these days? Is he sort of able to... Someone wrote me a letter recently, an email, and told me that Huge barely gets out of bed these days. That may have been the case for many decades anyway. But anyway, her instructions are she's seeking a penalty that would allow her to get away from the Gold Coast and take up her full-time position. Mr. McCallum said she had the knives in her possession for her own protection, but admitted this was no excuse. She instructs she has around 1.5 million followers on social media, and she's quite often harassed and stalked by those people. Well, there's a way around that. You can close your social media accounts down.